Hey everybody, it's Ryan Gard. Hey, I'm going to dive into Matthew 7 in just a minute. I'm going to teach through what I taught through last Sunday. It's the last message from the Sermon on the Mount. We went all the way from Matthew 5, 6, and 7, and we're done. It's crazy. So this is kind of the last time I get to talk about it. So I'm really looking forward to the next few minutes on this podcast. Before that, though, just a quick word. For the past, 18 years, I've been in this full-time ministry career, stumbled into the gig for sure, and then soon into the, career or whatever, I started talking to people about the value of counseling, like the benefit of counseling and therapy and all of these things, and primarily because I'd seen kind of secondhand how valuable it could be. So for the past 18 years, I've been talking about how everybody needs counseling, how everybody could benefit from counseling, how therapy is the best thing in the world. But the truth is, I never felt like, or maybe even wanted to admit, maybe it was at a subconscious level that the realization that, oh, hey, Ryan, by the way, you probably could benefit from some serious counseling. I say that laughing, so maybe that helps me realize, yeah, for like 18 years, I've been telling everybody to go do this thing, that I've actually never done. And to some degree, I've worked with counselors, I've overseen counselors, but never sat down on the couch myself outside of a couple of really quirky, weird ones that we ended up never going back to, Lindsay and I, early on. But all that to say, I had my very first session this past week. Last week, for a million reasons, it all sort of came bubbling to the surface, and I realized I really need someone to talk to. I am, yes, a teacher and a pastor, a communicator, and I come across as so confident sometimes. But man, this past week, I finally sat down with someone, and I'm doing it again, and I'm going to do it again, and I'm going to do it again, because I need it. And I think if you're wondering if there's some sort of weird taboo about counseling, of course we always speak to that and say there's not, but what in the world took me 18 years to finally sit down with someone? I think I was just busy trying to help other people. It's so typical and cliche, but I need it. And so if you sense that you're carrying something around, or for me, there's so many things that I know I'm carrying around, and then I talked to her and I just said, can you just tell me what I don't even know? why am I doing what I'm doing? How am I thinking the way I'm thinking? What's underneath the thing that's underneath the thing that's underneath that thing? Like, help me with that. So she's got her work cut out for her. So pray for her. But so encouragement to you, man. If it took me so long, and it actually took me Lindsay really kind of looking at me going, no, now is the time. And she's awesome. She gave me a ton of grace and then a big push. Matthew 7, 13. There's a few pictures that Jesus uses to close out the Sermon on the Mount. So if you have your Bible, cool. If not, if you're driving along and you're bumper to bumper, here we go. It says in verse 13, enter through the narrow gate. So this is Jesus still teaching. Enter through the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. Wide is that gate, broad is that road. It ends in destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few will find it. So he has a gate. This first picture is a gate. This first, it's a broad road, but then he's contrasting it with this tiny gate, this small, narrow gate that has a road on the other side of it that leads to life. But it's a small gate, small. This is verse 15. Watch out for false prophets. Just takes a total turn, seems like. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. And when I was reading this on Sunday, by the way, there were like three little kids that were sitting in the big, in the crowd with us, like eyes wide when I'm talking about wolves. And I looked over and realized they were kind of scared, and I just kind of let them be. It says, watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit, you will recognize them. So wolves with fruit. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. So first it was gates, now it's fruit. And then go to verse 24 with me. He says, therefore, Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew against and beat against that house, yet it didn't fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. Gates, fruit, houses. He ends the Sermon on the Mount with three images. This gate, this good and this bad fruit, and these two different houses. Now, I mean, we've talked through a million different topics in this series. I mean, we've talked through endless amounts of topics in this 5, 6, and 7 chapters. Just so many. The Sermon on the Mount deals with the entire spectrum of life. There's just about everything under the sun is presented here, from the smallest to the biggest. And so, like, just one example is, we covered it last week, that prayer. He says, give us today our daily bread. That's talking about the present need that we have. You know, forgive us our sins. That's covering our past. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us. That's our future. Lead us. So he's got the, the past, present, and future all wrapped up in that prayer that he teaches us how to pray. So it's like all of time, past, present, and future, every dimension of our existence, what we're going to eat, what we're going to drink, what we're going to wear, where we're going to go, how we're going to feel, how we're going to interact with each other, how we're going to treat each other, if we're going to control each other or not, that sort of, all of that is wrapped up into this. How we understand God is in this, our Father who are in heaven. You've got this whole contrast of how we understand ourselves and others. Everything that you need is really right here in Matthew 5, 6, and 7 to be fully human. Like from the most celestial of things to the specks in our eyes, he covers it all. And he ends it with this trilogy, these three pictures, just one after the other, just really quick. He just keeps talking. And then he says, first there's this gate, and then there's these trees, and there's these houses. And what he's actually doing, once again, wouldn't you imagine, he's brilliant. And just reading it, you're going to see in the picture, when you look at the gate, when you look at the trees, and you look at the houses, when you picture what he's talking about from a bigger picture, like zoom out, he's teaching through concentric circles. He's teaching through concentric circles, meaning from the outside in, from the inside out. He's gradually teaching in such a way that we would go from one place to another, using those metaphors, using the gate and the tree and the house. He wants us to move from the outside in. So let me paint that picture. Like the gate that he teaches of, he's warning us about essentially the world, or maybe better, cultural forces that are moving one way. And he says it's a broad and wide and many kind of road. There's broad, it's big, 6-lane, 7-lane freeway. And it's moving one way. He says it's a wide road that, he says just crystal clear, it leads to destruction. But then he contrasts that with this narrow path, this gate that leads to a narrow path that leads to life. And the simplest way to look at this, most people teach this as like a scare the hell out of people sort of message. Like everybody's, and that's just not what he's talking about. This is about our place within the larger culture. He is talking about this cultural movement, one direction, and it'll feel like everybody's going this direction. But then he paints a picture of this narrow path that you've got to get to. It's this tiny gate, this small gate. Now he's talking about this the outer circle. If we're going to build our way in on the concentric circle, the gate is the outermost circle that he's going to teach through here. And if he had a flip chart, I'm sure he would have grabbed a Sharpie and done a circle, much like I did. And then on the second part here, he talks about this tree. So he moves from this outer circle about the world, and he moves into this tree. What's the tree about? The tree is about the church. He talks about this good fruit and these false prophets, good prophets, false prophets. He's talking about the church. And he's talking about these people who he calls false prophets, false teachers. These are people that elevate themselves and speak on behalf of God, and they say things that sound right, because these are the kinds of people that 2,000 years ago and today speak fluent Christianese. They can drop a verse in a moment. They've got everything in the repertoire that they need to sound incredibly spiritual, but in fact, they're actually incredibly dangerous. And this is so subjective it can be, because I've been called a false prophet, and maybe you've been called a false teacher, maybe you've been called wrong about something that you believed in. But here's Jesus going, oh, no, they're going to come along and you're going to know them by their fruit. And it's going to be bad fruit, like what comes from their life, what is the result of their effort and toil and waking up every day. These are dangerous people that are going to, he says, devour you. And these are folks that, unfortunately, I've had a front row. Personally, I'm sure that Jesus can go, no, homie, that's you. I don't know if that's how he'd say it, but that's how the Holy Spirit speaks to me. We're pretty gangster. But Jesus talks about people that are in it for power. They're in it for ego. They're in it for reputation. They're in it for whatever the weird, sad, small reason that they're in it for. Their motives are impure. They're not in it to actually shepherd and care for these people, Jesus says. They're in it for power and for prestige and for comfort. And I think a lot of people get into ministry because this is a pathway. And this is a side note. I should say this at some sort of pastoral conference. But I think a lot of pastors get into ministry because there is an easy ladder to climb to power and celebrity and adoration. And I've seen it on a small scale, how easy it is to get people the standing ovations are easy to get. I'm proof of that. And if your motives are impure, your fruit, the fruit of your life, is going to be really bad. There's multiple reasons why your life could be difficult, or you could go through struggles. I'm not saying that every grape off of every good tree is absolutely perfect, but let me stretch this metaphor as far as I can. Good grief. All Jesus is saying is these are false prophets and they want to devour you. They're out there, so you have to be careful. So he goes from the outer cultural forces, moves it in on the concentric circle to the church, talks about good trees, bad trees, and then look what he does next. He talks about these two different houses. This is the sermon that, you know, you've heard preached a million times, because it's so incredibly important, because it's about the destructive forces not out there on the six-lane highway. It's not about the false teachers and false motives at the church. This is about the destructive forces that are within each and every one of us, the self-destructive tendencies that each and every one of us carry around, the illegitimate ways that so many of us seek to meet legitimate needs that God has given us, the innate desires that we have for goodness, righteousness, holiness, love, joy, peace, all of the things that we know that we are capable of looking elsewhere for. Every one of us. None of us is any different. No matter what your heart is, if you're a sheep or a wolf, you also have a house to deal with. And Jesus says that you can hear his teachings, whether on this podcast or in face-to-face conversation with him that day. You can have them explained and understood in the Greek and in the Hebrew and even in the Aramaic. There's some of that in there. And you can own all of the concordances and books in the world, but this teaching can leave you unaffected. There's a chance if you don't actually do what he says. There's this huge word in verse 24. Therefore, everyone, who hears these words of mine, and then I underlined it, and puts them into practice, is a wise man who built his house on the rock. But here he's saying, you know, you can go to church on Sundays and Wednesdays and Tuesdays and go through the motions and never change. But Jesus says this really, really powerful claim that if you haven't built your life on his teachings and in his way, then your house is on sand. And he's the only one that can claim that. And I'm not up here saying follow the teachings of Ryan or your house is going to crash. Jesus said it. If you follow the Matthew 5, 6, and 7 way of life and follow me and my teachings, your house is on the rock. If not, it's going to get difficult. And when it gets difficult, it's going to come down crashing. And now, why these three? Why these three pictures? Because I think it's actually a beautiful picture of, and the best way I can put it is, I think he's trying to put on display that he's trying to teach us and explain really, really clearly that we have to be intentional. I don't want to go self-help book on you for the next few minutes, but it's important that we see that this power of intention and having a plan. And I rewrote my sermon this week because I even found myself to some degree kind of realizing, what is my personal like plan? Where am I actually being intentional and where am I in neutral? Where am I intentional and what parts of my life am I just sitting in neutral? Where am I actually in drive and where am I like sitting in that car wash when you pull up and you lock into the little thing and then you have to throw it in neutral and just let it take over? Sometimes that's nice to just be able to kick back and relax and sit in neutral, except it's incredibly dangerous if you're doing that every day of the week, you know, from maybe not 9 to 5, but from 5 to 9, and if it's just sitting in neutral or whatever it may be for you. Jesus is going to talk about these larger forces. And you look at that outer circle, and these are the larger forces that want to pull you in a certain direction, like a whirlpool. If you just sit there, it's going to take you wherever it wants to take you. It's like I-10 at rush hour. You're trying to get from the carpool lane on I-10 all the way over to the 143 north. Good luck, buddy. That's 7 lanes that you've got to like get through, and there's a whole bunch of angry people that don't want you to get between them and the car in front of them, and so you try to get from the far left lane. This is a true story that just happened last week. The far left lane, and you're just trying to get over 143 north because you're trying to go to like Scottsdale or you're trying to go to, you know, Arcadia. And instead, all of a sudden, nobody's letting you over. And there are 5 million people heading in their Hummers, Scottsdale, down to wherever in the world they're going towards Phoenix. And all of a sudden, you can't get over. And these forces called traffic in this scenario have pulled you. And now you're on your way to Blythe. And now you're on your way to Blythe. I don't want to go to Blythe. And that's a silly illustration, but it's everyone's junior high and high school years. It's many of us when we entered the workforce and you found yourself all of a sudden in a sea of what everyone else said was normal. And you found yourself heading in the direction that everybody else said, this is just where we're going. This is where you go. This is what you do. This is how you do it. And here's the thing though. Some like quote unquote normal is actually, it's insane. So Jesus talks about a large crowd and his illustration is they're all going one way, but when they keep going that way, the destination that they don't know that they're heading towards is a cliff. Like the word destruction isn't like, oh, it's going to be a bummer. And it's no, you're going to go skydiving without a parachute is what Jesus is talking about. What he's saying is when you're going with the flow that direction, Jesus is saying life isn't found that way. It's found this way. Like he's incredibly specific and clear that when the mob is heading that way, they're looking for something or they're just oblivious that they're even going anywhere. He says the life isn't found that way. Jesus is saying it's found this way. So if you're serious about this Jesus path, and I think you want to be otherwise, why are you still listening? And why are you doing the church thing? And why are you reading? And why are you praying? Well, I'm imagining that you're serious about this Jesus way of life and this Jesus path and all of the things. If you are serious, there's definitely going to be moments, if you're paying attention, when everyone's headed one way and you're going to go, that's actually insane. And I used a bunch of illustrations on Sunday, and I started with the silliest ones like, keeping up with the Kardashians. No, I don't want to keep up with the Kardashians. And we're The Bachelor. And I'm not bashing the Kardashians. And I'm not bashing The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. I've never seen either one of those episodes. Right now you're like, oh, he's seen them all. He's a secret lover of those shows. No, I'm actually not. I think it's kind of odd. And I went to ASU premise, but I still think it's odd that there's a show where a dude's like, I don't know which one of you I love. I better kiss all of you to figure that out. Yeah. If Hadley gets on that show, Daddy's going to show up on that stage one day, and it's going to be a really good show. Where was I? You lost me when I thought of Hadley on The Bachelor punching some dude that doesn't exist yet. Anyways, Pastor Ryan, back. But there's there's millions of these things, and there's billions of dollars spent for you and for me to sort of be distracted and let our jaws just sort of hang as we stare at something that's actually insane. And maybe just let it just entertain us. And you're like, ease up, Ryan. Okay, I'll ease up. But I will say there are billions of dollars spent to get you to drool. And there are billions of dollars spent to get you to buy things. And there are as many dollars spent to get you to climb certain ladders, whether they are personal or professional, to achieve something. There's so many things out there that you, when you see them, you look at them and you go, that's insane. But somebody's like, what? And they're climbing that ladder. They're going that direction. They're doing that thing. And you're sitting there going, what are you doing? You know, for me, I shared an illustration. I won't share the whole thing, but I felt like over the past 17 years or so, in many ways, I got to the top of the ladder, my ladder, whatever ladder I had created, that I was like, if I just get there, that I'll, and I did, I did get there. And in many ways, not every way, there's so much good that happened, but in some ways I look back and I say, man, I think I leaned my ladder against the wrong building. I think I spent a lot of time and a lot of effort, a lot of energy, a lot of days, a lot of years climbing something and trying to accomplish something, trying to be a part of some things. And just for me, I might have spent a lot of time doing something that today I look at and go, man, I was doing my best with what I had, but man, today I go, that was kind of crazy. But it was a broad, wide road. I'm not criticizing anybody that was along the path with me, but for me personally, I went, I spent a long time. Maybe you're there and you're just going, all right, I want to be a person of intention. So he ends with this picture of the gate, the outer, and the fruit sort of within, and then the houses. So he's been talking about like forgiveness and nonviolence and generosity and entrusting all of life to God, to become a certain kind of person in the world. And I love that. So if you do, if you take this path and you set out to become this kind of person, there's going to be these moments when everyone's acting like everything's totally normal. And you're going to say, this is insane. And to become a person of intention, you have to say yes to something and no to 1,000 other things. So like to become a person who forgives, to intentionally become a person who forgives, like that's not just going to happen automatically. You're not just going to wake up one morning like, oh man, I have been wounded and I wish them the best and I hold nothing against them, right? Is that your experience? I don't know what happened, man. I woke up on Monday like full of forgiveness and no bitterness. I had no desire for revenge, not one bit. I friended them again on Instagram. I missed them. And I missed them. I liked that photo of them with my ex, whatever it is for you, too personal. But to say, I want to be a person of forgiveness. I don't want to be bound up with bitterness. And I want to say no to revenge. I want to say no to relational pong, where it's just back and forth and back and forth. To become a person who like doesn't slander or gossip other people. You have to say no to all the tempting moments when you've got something, man. They said something about you and oh, you've got something about them. And it's this desire. So it's to say yes to this person of intention, to say yes to this narrow gate, and to say yes to finding it in your life as soon as you possibly can with all of the energy that you have. You're going to have to say 1,000 no's to all of the other invitations, to all of the other lanes that you could drive in. You have to say no. And that denial is going to have to be driven by a desire for something better. So to say no to the flow is to say yes to this gate, this life that you see, this way of Jesus, you're going to have to fight for it, man. I don't want to be pretty with you. Go to Barnes & Noble if you need a cute self-help book. This is going to take a fight, and you are worth a fight. This is going to take a fight, and your kids are worth a fight. This is going to take a fight, and your wife is worth a fight. Your husband is worth a fight. Your soul and well-being is worth a fight. Your joy is worth a fight. If you find yourself in a toxic environment where this just seems impossible, then your first step in this fight is to get out of there. Say no to that. To say this isn't where the life is to say no to anywhere that you have found yourself, or maybe somebody has helped you get there and you'd go, this is not where the life is. and the lights have to come on, and maybe you need somebody to look at you and say, this isn't where your life is. So at this point on Sunday, I played a clip from my favorite music group, Sleeping at Last. It's essentially a guy, Ryan O'Neill, who builds a team of musicians around him for all of his songs, all of his albums. And I played this song, and you can go listen to it later, and it's just this idea. I played the song Saturn. I played the first 60 seconds of Saturn. It's this cello. It's just the beginning of the song. It's just beautiful. And it's a woman named Sharon Gerber on the cello. And if I handed you a cello today, most likely if you're listening, it would not sound the way Sharon Gerber's cello sounds when you play it. So Sharon Gerber has a master's and a bachelor's in cello. I didn't know that was possible. You can get a bachelor's and a master's in cello. And so we listened to this song, Saturn, as Sharon started it out. And Ryan comes on later, but the first 60 seconds are Sharon's. And it's just a masterpiece in my humble opinion of non-cello expertise. But man, when I listen to that song, it's just unbelievable. She's playing in the song a 180-year-old cello named Murgatroyd. That sounds like my 7-year-old named it, but I love it. Murgatroyd. That's this cello that for, gosh, 5 times as long as I've been alive has been making this unbelievable music. And I say all that, and you're like, where are you going with this? So picture the first time Sharon picked up the cello. It sounded probably terrible. I don't know if she was a prodigy. I don't think so. I don't think so. She has her master's and her bachelor's. You don't get your bachelor's and your master's if you're Mozart. You just be Mozart. So Sharon went for it, and she went and got her degree. But before she got her degree, I'm going to imagine she was 7 when she first picked up or had someone lean a big old cello against her. Let's imagine she was 12, because that's hard to imagine a 7-year-old holding a cello. So she's 12. Sure, I could find this information, but she had to pick up the cello. She's a 12, 13-year-old girl. What's a 12 or 13-year-old girl's life like? Busy, fun, unexpected. Why? I don't know what these 13-year-old girls do. I don't know. I have a 4-year-old girl, and I was never a 13-year-old girl. But I'd imagine she had the world at her fingertips. I would imagine that a young girl that can afford to play the cello probably had the opportunity to do lots of other things like soccer, volleyball, softball, baseball, chess team, lacrosse, hockey, glee club. I don't have notes for this, but I'd imagine she had a million different invitations to do a million different things. So how many no's did Sharon say to say yes to the cello? How many times did she say, no, I'm going to stay home and I'm going to play the cello? How many people went, what? Like, what? We're going out. And she's like, yeah, but I got Murgatroyd. She's at home on a Friday night hanging out with Murgatroyd, the 180-year-old cello friend. All right, that may sound sad until you listen to the first 60 seconds of Saturn and you realize that all of the no's that she said created a masterpiece called Saturn and 100 other songs. And hundreds of other shows and dozens of awards and goosebump hair on my arm as I think about how beautiful that song is and how rare it is for someone to say yes to something so many times that she could create that. She's a person of intention, and her yes was the cello, and I'm so glad. Your relationship, my marriage, started with a yes. And if it's going to be anything like Sharon's success on the cello, it better be followed by a million no's. So that forgiveness and that love and that peace that you're hoping for, like, nobody becomes a person of peace and forgiveness accidentally. Nobody drifts into, I'm just that person already. No, that's not the case. All right, so there's tension, and I'm going to wrap up because we're at the 29-minute mark, and that's how long sermons are supposed to be. Although Jesus's was like 14 minutes, and we're still talking about it 2,000 years ago later. John chapter 12, Jesus said, It's one of my favorite verses. He said, when I am lifted up, he's still alive when he says this, when I am lifted up, I will draw all people to myself. When I am lifted up, I will draw everyone to myself. That's a podcast for another day, my friends. This is Jesus saying, before Rob Bell got a chance, I win. When I'm lifted up, I'm drawing everyone to myself. When I'm lifted up, I will draw all people to myself. Where are you going, Ryan? What's this about? Oh, that's beautiful. And that verse has messed me up. And it should mess you up. God's not a jerk. I'm not a better dad than God the Father. But he's holy. Okay. Here's what I'm saying in John 12. His embrace, Jesus' embrace, is as wide as the world. But he's also perfectly honest. And he ends Matthew 5, 6, and 7, this beautiful Sermon on the Mount that we've packaged together here, this sermon, this brilliant, cohesive, concentric circle ending. And he ends it basically by asking, have you settled for the wide road? Have you settled for the broad path? Have you settled for anyone else's teachings on how to live the best possible life? Has this life taken you off in a direction that you don't want to be in anymore? That I don't know how I got here. I don't know why I got here. Maybe I know exactly how I got here and I know why I'm here. I did it. I decided it. Maybe you were sitting in the back seat and someone took you there. Maybe you were in the driver's seat. Either way, if you're somewhere or if you're involved in something, and you would say that this isn't where the life is, this is for you. Maybe today you've called it normal long enough, but today you say that's enough. That's enough. Jesus would say that's a wide road, and there's lots of people that take that road. But it leads to death. It doesn't lead to life. This way, he's saying, this way is better. And would you just trust him when he says that his life is better than your death and my death? My drift into where everyone else is wanting to go, wherever I thought was better, I've tried to find something better over here, he's just saying, hey, if you want, there's a path over here, you got to fight for it, you got to get to it. But it's better. If you're saying today that wherever you are, whatever you're involved in, whatever it is, if you're saying today that this isn't where life is, maybe today you'd say, that's not normal, this isn't normal, and that's enough, that's enough, that's enough. That was my week. And that's why I set up my very first counseling session ever. And that's why I said, I'm going to do everything I can right now, drastic, to be the best, absolute best version of myself I can be. I'm not going to just sort of drift, because there is a pastoral drift. There's just an assumption that you're just doing okay all the time. And maybe that's the same for you. Everybody just assumes you're doing okay and everything looks okay. And maybe you're not falling off a cliff, but maybe you feel like you just sense, wait, if I keep going this direction, maybe you've seen that story play itself out enough times that today you'd slam on the brakes and you would hook a hard right and you would make your way to that small gate. And I promise you it's better. And so I just pray that you today, whatever it is, that you'd have the courage to, maybe before you're in a crash, maybe you would just start to veer right, whatever it is for you. Just change lanes, head that direction. Because there is a gate that leads to life, and you can find it. I believe that for you. So I love you guys. That, my friends, is the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount series at Prodigal Church. I hope you come this Sunday. It's a really, really important Sunday. I'm not just saying that. Come this Sunday. There's some really incredibly important stuff that I want to chat with you about. So we'll see you on Sunday. We'll sing a few songs together, have some food, and then I'll share some things. Cool. I'll see you guys on Sunday. If not, I will record something for all of y'all about this time next week. Have a great day.